Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Keynote by CNBC Events. I'm Tyler Matheson. On this podcast, we bring you in-depth, candid conversations with executives, experts, and thought leaders from around the world. Today, you'll hear from Kristen Silverberg. She's Executive Vice President of Policy at the Business Roundtable. It's an association of large company American CEOs working to promote a thriving U.S. economy through better public policy. And Temple University President Jason Wingard. He's the former dean of the School of Professional Studies at Columbia University. Silverberg and Wingard joined me at CNBC's Capital Exchange on September 15, 2021, to talk about the state of the American labor force, the skills the next generation of workers will need, and how employers can give themselves a competitive advantage to attract talent in this tight labor market. I started our conversation by asking about the skills gap. We began by exploring the critical skills that can fill the gaps between the public sector and academia. If there's a mismatch, how could it be filled? Here's Kristen Silverberg.
You know, Business Roundtable represents about 200 CEOs of some of the largest U.S. companies, and this issue is really front and center for them. If you ask them what's on your mind, what's worrying you, almost all of them will say, finding workers and making sure that workers have the right skill sets for a rapidly changing economy. They've been approaching that issue with a lot of creativity and determination. One of the things we're really proud of right now is some work we're doing. We call it multiple pathways, but it's about opening up the workplaces to talented people from all backgrounds, including people without degrees. Degrees are appreciated, but they aren't always necessary. And so we have about 80 companies that are really rethinking their hiring and promotion practices to make sure that their jobs are available to people from all kinds of different backgrounds. And of course, they're investing very heavily in reskilling efforts, providing tuition assistance to employees who want to go back and get some extra training or education, lots of on-the-job training. And we're doing some exciting work around skill adjacencies. So it turns out that some of the skills you need for lower demand or lower paying jobs are very similar to the skills you need for high demand, higher paying jobs. For example, if you're a good machine operator on an assembly line with a little bit of vocational training, you could be a really good maintenance technician. And so we're doing a lot of research on those skill adjacencies to give companies and workers the confidence that they have the ability to kind of move into higher demand jobs.
I want to explore a little more one of the things you said and then get, Jason, your response to it. You said that degrees, basically four-year degrees, are nice to have, maybe my words, not yours, but not necessary to have in today's economy. I wonder how you would react to the question, are four-year universities graduating, minting the kind of workers business needs, or are they not?
You know, I think a lot of four-year universities are really investing in making sure that they are focused on developing the skills that are needed in a changing workforce. We're really proud of our partnerships with universities across the country. We run something called the Workplace Partnership Initiative, where major employers sit at the table with universities, community colleges, and others to try to make sure that there's a real alignment between educators and the demands of the workplace. And a lot of our companies are doing that individually. Amazon has a partnership with 200 colleges around the country to teach cloud computing skills. JP Morgan has a great partnership with City University of New York, Bank of America with North Carolina Chapel Hill. And so we really do have a great partnership. On multiple pathways, what we're trying to make sure is that is that we're not unnecessarily closing off jobs to people who don't have four-year degrees, because a lot of people without degrees have the skills they need to succeed at Business Roundtable companies.
So, Jason, let's turn to you and get your reaction to the overall question of are universities, institutions like Temple, graduating, minting the right kinds of graduates for the jobs that are out there today. I know a little bit about Temple, and I know that your university is an extraordinarily diverse one. It is a regional, national, and international, very diverse. And as I understand it, you have a focus on making sure that when your graduates finish, whether it is a business degree, a communications degree, a technology degree, a nursing degree, that they are ready to go out and get a job. They're not just studying Socrates.
Yes. Well, good morning, Tyler. And it sounds like you're instigating a debate, and I'm ready for that debate. A lot of people do ask the question about what is the ROI of higher education today, colleges and universities. Are we preparing our students to meet the demands of the workplace? And Kristen is exactly right. In cases where the universities are not preparing students to meet the demands of the workplace, then those employers are doing it themselves. They're doing it through partnerships, but they're initiating that work themselves. So what does that mean for a place like Temple University and all of our peers around the world? What it means is that we need to do a better job of crafting and developing a curriculum that is in partnership with the employers, that's in partnership with the workforce, understanding the needs, the competencies, the skills that are required to be able to do the job of today and to be able to do the job of tomorrow. For so long, universities have had a static curriculum, meaning we have taught how to be critical thinkers, how to analyze, how to read certain works and have discussion and discourse, but we have not as readily been preparing our students to apply all of that theoretical knowledge to the jobs. And so if we at Temple University and all of our peers around the world want to make sure that the workforce is prepared by us as a source, higher education, to be able to do the work that is necessary, then we have to adapt. We have to pivot as an institution to be able to do that. And that's what we are doing at Temple University now.
Yeah, if I can hop in, Tyler, I think that's just a fantastic point that so many universities around the country, heads of community college are really, really innovating, really working closely with Business Roundtable companies. And we're really proud of those partnerships. There's one partnership that Business Roundtable launched recently that we think is going to pay a lot of dividends with the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. And that's something where our companies are providing internships to students at HBCUs and, you know, making commitments to help give them pathways to jobs at Business Roundtable companies. So I think when we're sitting at the table together that actually business and higher education are making a real difference.
And I can jump in there, too, Kristen. You make a really good point about the types of partnerships that are readily in play right now. Tyler, you mentioned that Temple University is one of the largest universities in the country. It certainly is the provider for this region. And as a result, it is extremely diverse. And so it is imperative upon us to be able to make sure that with the diversity of our student base, with the diversity of our faculty, with the diversity of disciplines we have, as you mentioned, from nursing to business to communications to healthcare, we need to make sure that we are adapting our curriculum in the way that I said before to be much more applied, and that we are partnering with a whole range of institutional partners, employers, so that they can understand what we are teaching, we can understand the needs and the skills and the capabilities that they have. And that way, we are providing a direct source of talent from Temple University straight into the workforce, already ready to be able to do the work, as opposed to providing them with employees who are good critical thinkers and who are ready to learn. And it's the incumbent upon that employer to be able to do that training. They don't want to have to do as much training as they are doing now. They want us to be able to do it. So if we provide the partnerships that Kristen mentioned ahead of time, while these students are learning in the university environment, then they are ready for their workforce and they can be much more, provide much more of a competitive advantage for those companies.
So, Jason, you're new to your job. You've been there over the summer. You have a long history in working in human capital. How exactly do you plan or have you begun this transformation of the curriculum away from sort of an academic focus or a critical thinking focus to a more applied focus? How do you do that? Give me an example of what's taking place in the courses, in the syllabuses or syllabi, I guess, and in the minds of the teachers who are having to make this pivot.
Ah, that's a great point, Tyler. And yes, I just started. I have a long background in human capital management. I'm working at Temple now as its president, but by my background at Columbia University, but also in the private sector at Goldman Sachs and Silicon Graphics before that, I have had the opportunity to see both sides of the fence. What the employers need in terms of a dynamic exchange of competencies that you need to be readily available as the market shifts for your people to be able to have the skills to adapt to those shifts. But at the university level, we're trying to train a cadre of learners on an old, ageless curriculum that is rooted in the kind of analytical critical thinking skills that you talked about. So what we need to do, to answer your question directly, is both and. It's not a replacement of the critical thinking liberal arts foundation that people have been learning for generations. It's that, which is the theoretical basis, plus the applied connection to the skills and abilities that employers want. How do we do that as a university? We have the kinds of partnerships that Kristen and I have been talking about with the companies in our region, with the companies nationally. What is it that they need skills-wise around artificial intelligence and data science and logistics planning? How do we integrate that into our curriculum so that when our students are learning right now, they are learning how to think, how to discourse, how to be creative and innovative, but they are also learning the tangible hard skills of how to do coding or how to manage with soft skills, things like that, so that they are ready for the workforce immediately upon graduating from Temple University. That's where the ROI is beneficial to both the students who are graduating mm-hmm. and looking for jobs and the employers who are looking for institutional partners in higher education who are providing the kinds of talent that are ready for the job right now, as opposed to the kinds of talent that need to be trained.
You know, I love that you said there that it's kind of a both and approach. I took a liberal arts education, and I love being able, as a result of that liberal arts education, to be able to tell the difference between a Monet and a Manet, or between Tchaikovsky and Beethoven when I hear it. But has it helped me in anything I've done since then? Probably not, but it makes me a more well-rounded, I guess, and more educated individual. Kristen, let me turn back to you, because we're really talking here about, in part, the value of that four-year education. The paradigm has typically been in American education that if you are aspirational, what you want to do is go through the primary grades into the secondary grades and then move into a four-year or a two-year university that then leads to a higher degree. Do we need to break that paradigm to make sure and say, it's okay not to have a four-year degree? It's okay if what you are getting is a technical skilling, like learning how to code, like learning how to be a mechanic, a plumber, a builder. These are jobs that can lead to a very good middle-class living, by the way.
Look, I think a lot of universities around the country do an amazing job. I completely agree with what Dr. Wingard said about the value of critical thinking, some soft skills like communications. So I absolutely, for lots of people, that's going to be the right path, but not for everybody. And, you know, Business Roundtable companies are really proud of the jobs they provide, of the good wages and the really good benefits. And what they're saying, what our CEOs of these big companies are saying, is there's a path to success that does not involve a four-year degree. And we want to make sure that our hiring and promotion practices account for that. And so anyway, I think what they're doing is basically saying there's a diversity of backgrounds that's going to succeed at a Business Roundtable company, and that's really where we want to head.
Let me just out of my own experience, if you'd asked me 15 years ago, what is the skill that people need? I would have said learning Mandarin. A few years ago, I would have said learning code. And I always would have said learn to invest in yourself. Kristen, that's the most important thing an individual can do. Invest in oneself so that you have the talent and skill you need to get hired. Rob Falzon mentioned that there are 10 million unfilled jobs in this country, Kristen, and people talk about why the job growth hasn't been higher. Is it the lack of childcare? Is it the extended unemployment benefits? But it seems to me that the reason we have more unfilled jobs than unemployed individuals is the mismatch of skills, that the job that the individuals don't have the experience, the resume, the training they need to fill the jobs that business needs. Is that the core issue?
I think it's really all of the above. I absolutely think that schools and childcare has been an issue. I have a little bit of a disagreement with the secretary on the role of UI. I think expanded UI has discouraged some workers from coming back to the workplace. That just expired in about half the states, so we'll see. But I think that has played a role. I think anxiety about the pandemic and about being back in the workplace has played a role. But you are right that the skills mismatch is continuing to be a real struggle. And as I said, that's really front of mind for all of our CEOs and why they're investing so heavily in different programs to try to address it.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Let's go to a question from our audience, from a person named Marcia, who asks, given the current gig trend among workers, why aren't employers tapping into the large executive population? Ageism, according to this person, still runs rampant. Kristen, you want to react to that? And then, Jason, I'll get your thought.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point that, you know, every Business Roundtable CEO would like to start with making sure their existing workforce is equipped to fill jobs that are in demand. I think that's why they are thinking about things like tuition assistance. You know, virtually all of our companies offer tuition assistance to some or all of their workforce so that workers who want to go back to get trained for a new role can do that. And that's where the program I talked about regarding skill adjacencies really matters. So helping existing workers see a pathway to a job that's in a higher demand, even if that involves a little bit of vocational training. But I think it's a really important point that step number one is to help your existing workforce really transition into new higher demand jobs.
Jason, let me ask you to react to that question about the gig economy and using older workers who may be well-skilled in the use of digital devices and so forth and or have the time to be a part of the Instacart, the Uber generation, whatever. But let me also ask you, as you sit in the middle of a large 38,000-person university, what do your students want out of a job today beyond good pay and benefits and security and a sensitive boss? What are they looking for?
Yeah, sure. Well, for the first question, I agree with Kristen. One of the questions that employers are asking, it's the number one agenda item for many of these Fortune 100 companies, is whose responsibility is it to satisfy this talent war? Is it the individual's responsibility, as you just mentioned, Tyler, earlier, to train and upskill and reskill themselves and be available on the market, on the open marketplace and the gig economy as a contractor? Or is it the responsibility of the employer? Is it the responsibility of those companies to then take in their workers and to train them and to retrain them and to make them ready for the workplace? This is a hot debate that I'm discussing with many CEOs around the globe. Whose responsibility is it? What is the best path to competitive advantage for this talent war dynamic? And so when you talk about ageism, when you talk about older employees and their ability to adapt to the marketplace, you see a lot of companies who are siding on the side of let us reinvest in our existing workplace. And you see that in Amazon, who is saying we are going to spend almost $1 billion on that retooling, that reskilling, that upskilling for our existing workplace. Some of them are middle-aged, some of them are younger, but a lot of them are older workers. And they are betting the bank, basically, on the ability to be able to develop that cadre of workers. You have other companies, and Google's an example of this, where they are actually banking on the contractor economy, the gig economy. They are saying our industry is moving so quickly that we increasingly need to be able to go out and get those skilled workers who are on the contractor market to be able to come in and do work for us. And as soon as we don't need that skill or that competency, then we'll go back out to the labor market and hire somebody else. So we see that debate going back and forth. And the way ageism plays into that is really interesting, as you mentioned. Now, the second question you asked, yes, I oversee a large university, almost 40,000 students, and a healthcare system with more than 1,000 physicians. And people ask all the time, what is it that the graduates of our university are looking for in terms of employers? One of the things that I always start with, because we start with data in the university, is that in a couple of years, by 2025, 75% of the workforce is going to be comprised of millennials and Gen Z, that younger generation. And they are going to have the power of numbers in just a small number of years. And if we have a talent war right now, following the pandemic and following this skills gap shortage, we are certainly going to have one in the future, because workplaces of today are not equipped to handle what these millennials and Gen Z, the generation, really want. So many people are asking me, as an executive coach to CEOs and as a university president, what do they want? And they want a couple of different things. They certainly want, number one, a flexible work arrangement. They want flexible work in and out of the workplace. I want to be able to do good work, but you have to let me do it where I want to do it, when I want to do it, how I want to do it. It's your responsibility to tell me what the deliverable is and allow me the flexibility and the autonomy to do it when and where I want. And objectively, I will be able to do that. So that's point number two. The metrics have to be objective as opposed to subjective. Third thing, they want diversity. They want to be able to work with diversity of culture, religion, race, and thought. They want to be able to work in a whiteboard setting with a bunch of people who have a lot of different perspectives so that they can create new and novel and innovative ideas for that company to satisfy that competitive advantage. They also want to be able to have an organization that is tied into, and this is important, social justice issues. They want a perspective from the organization that they work for that says, given immigration or a whole host of different social and political issues, they want that organization to have a point of view. So Ben and Jerry's has done a good job of that. Nike has done a good job of that. And to be clear, it doesn't matter whether you're on the right or the left of the political spectrum, but it's having a perspective and a point of view that this younger generation wants to connect with. And they want the leaders, by the way, to also have a perspective. So gone are the days from the Mad Men era where you don't bring in your political perspective to the workplace. You want your employees to know what it is you believe in, what it is you stand for as a leader and as an organization. So those are some of the things that this younger generation is going to want and need: flexible work, social justice perspective, objective metrics, and diversity.
That is a very complete answer about what today's young employees are seeking. Kristen, would you like to react to that and add anything to it or take issue with anything Jason just said there?
I would. I agree with all of that. You know, Business Roundtable companies employ about 20 million workers, and those workers have the same diversity of viewpoint as the rest of America. It's kind of all over the map. But one thing we hear a lot from CEOs is that in hiring younger workers, they really want to work for a company that aligns with their values. And that creates real challenges. They want a company that aligns with their values, both in how the CEO runs the company, but also the kinds of issues that a CEO will speak out on. There's more of a demand among employees and customers for CEOs to have a point of view on things that are outside of the company's four walls. And so the real question for CEOs is, when is that appropriate? You know, to have some humility, understand that a lot of the issues that are coming up are not in the area of expertise of the CEO or the company, but to really have some, you know, put some thought into when a company is going to speak out on a non-economic issue.
That was Business Roundtable's Kristen Silverberg and Jason Wingard, the president of Temple University. They joined me at CNBC's Capital Exchange on September 15th, 2021. The Keynote is produced by the CNBC Events team. For more information on upcoming CNBC events and how you can join us, and we hope you will, please visit cnbcevents.com. I'm Tyler Matheson. Thanks for listening.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.